DW Africa Link.
Did you know that sub-Saharan Africa accounts for a disproportionately high share of global antimicrobial resistance deaths? Well, that sounds like a mouthful, but it boils down to this ominous fact. Antimicrobial resistance, or AMR, occurs when bacteria, viruses, or fungus are not responsive to drugs used to treat infections. In other words, when our medicines no longer work. But can we stop this trend? And how? That's what's coming up. I'm Kai Nebe. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from across Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
So, antimicrobial resistance, or AMR for short, is already affecting our communities. A recent groundbreaking report by the Global Research on Antimicrobial Resistance Project forecasts that between 2025 and 2050, more than 6 million deaths will be directly attributed to AMR in sub-Saharan Africa. That's scary stuff. Which is why I'm now joined by Janet Midega, the research lead in drug-resistant infections for the Wellcome Trust in London, with a special focus on antimicrobial resistance. This report, it came out saying, well, 6.5 million people would die due to AMR in sub-Saharan Africa. Now, at first I thought, okay, this is a massive number. It's over 25 years. Then I thought, well, maybe it's not so big. How best to think about this? Is this like a really big problem, or is it something that should cause alarm, or is it something that you're actually more kind of expected to happen?
So it's something that should cause alarm, and I think it's important, especially because antimicrobial resistance is a shared global problem. So antimicrobial resistance not only affects populations in low and middle income countries, but it does affect all countries in the world. So it remains an alarming public health threat worldwide. It causes high mortality and morbidity. However, the highest burden, which means the highest mortality, the highest number of deaths, is especially in low and middle income countries, and those are in sub-Saharan Africa and in Southeast Asia.
And can we talk a little bit about perhaps why this is the case? Is it due to the available medical facilities, or is it due to climatic conditions? Or
first of all, antimicrobial resistance occurs when bacteria become non-responsive to the drugs that would normally treat the infection or would normally kill the bacteria. So AMR becomes a problem, first of all, because medicines have failed. Antibiotics have failed as a result of antimicrobial resistance. But why is that? That is the case because most of the time, treatment is given without proper diagnosis. So the lack of proper diagnosis of bacterial infections enhances the inappropriate use of antibiotics, because sometimes without proper diagnosis, the antibiotic that is given is not specific to effectively treat the infection. Secondly, we know that antimicrobial prescription and intake remain inadequately regulated, especially in low and middle income countries, because we know that the health system in these countries is not adequate. Therefore, most often, instead of people going to the doctor, they go to the pharmacy to buy their medicine. So they end up using the wrong medicine sometimes, but sometimes also end up not completing the dosage that they are given because there's no follow-up with the doctor after that. So health systems failure means that people are not well diagnosed and the pharmacy turns into the hospital. So to solve this problem, most African countries have national action plans, which unfortunately, again, are not adequately financed and therefore are not well implemented. So we know that AMR being a multifaceted problem requires action from different sectors of the economy, the politics, the health system, the policymakers in order to solve the problem.
So can I just circle back to what you're referring to? Because I thought that's an interesting comment you make, that the pharmacy has become the hospital. Can you maybe just talk us through for an example, like, what is leading to this? Is it really almost basically every single doctor's responsibility to not prescribe a certain antibiotic?
No, it is not a single doctor's responsibility not to prescribe an antibiotic. When I talk about health systems failure, what I mean is this. So suppose you go into a low and middle income country where the health system isn't perfect. This means that if I'm a laborer who would normally go to a work site early in the morning and I feel ill, so I have to choose between going to the hospital and being on a queue for half of the day as I wait to see the doctor. And then when I see the doctor, a test is recommended. But then the test is not even available in that hospital. The test is recommended, but a private laboratory is recommended. So the patient has to go out of the hospital to a private laboratory to have the test executed. And then the test result comes 2 days later. Then you have to pick it and bring it back to the hospital and then get a doctor's prescription. So that lack of an effective health system means that this person will prefer, instead of going to the hospital and going through that entire process, they would rather go to a pharmacy. Explain to the pharmacist or drug seller how they're feeling, and the pharmacist will then recommend an antibiotic. But of course, the pharmacist's recommendation is not guided by an appropriate diagnosis, but is guided by the explanation that the patient has given. Chances are that that antibiotic that is recommended might work, luckily, but in some cases, if the infecting pathogen would be resistant to the recommended antibiotic, then it means that this medicine is not going to work, and the person will most likely come back after a few days again to say, okay, that didn't work. Can I have another option of medicine? So that alone exacerbates the problem of resistance, because you have this infecting pathogen getting exposed continuously to the medicine that is not intended to treat it. Meanwhile, the patient is becoming more and more sick, so that by the time they get to hospital, they might already be critically ill and at risk of death.
I see. And now I understand that if this situation is repeated, I don't know, times 100, times 1,000, with everybody more or less doing the same thing, it becomes much more of a continental problem, where even if you are prescribed a certain antibiotic, there are illnesses that can gain resistance to that particular antibiotic, correct?
Exactly. And the other thing we have to remember is that antimicrobial resistance is very ubiquitous, because you find antimicrobial resistance genes even in our environment. And so there are very, very many channels through which resistance occurs, and therefore we as users of antibiotics must use them well in order to preserve the medicines that we have out there at the moment.
Okay. From your point of view, what is an effective way for governments, or at least health officials, to at least combat this?
I think that the huge problem with AMR is that it cuts across different illnesses. So it's not like malaria, which is just malaria is a single illness. Antimicrobial resistance cuts across different diseases. So I think one of the most important thing for governments to do is to work on infection prevention and control, so that infections can be prevented before they occur. This would really, really help to reduce the burden of AMR. The other thing that governments could do is enhance water, sanitation, and hygiene services, as well as vaccinations which are available. For example, the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. Ensure coverage of the population with existing vaccinations is as wide as possible. But most importantly is to ensure that there is effective access to antibiotics. What we see from our Graham report is that in Africa, the deaths are not only because resistance occurs, but the deaths are as a result of the fact that people do not have access to the right antibiotics when they need them. So most of that mortality happens due to lack of access to antibiotics. But most importantly would also be to prioritize antimicrobial resistance at a national level and to increase domestic and international funding. not only to fund the national action plans at the country level to mitigate local AMR burden, but also international funding for innovation and access towards the development of new innovative novel antibiotics that can replace those that are already running out of use. But I think doing all this will not be effective unless we have a change in the mindset among policymakers, because when changes are made, when evidence out of research is produced, then there's a need to change policy. So, for example, can governments change policy around the sale of falsified and substandard drugs, antibiotics? Can governments change policy around obtaining antibiotics without a doctor's prescription? So I think these are some of the important things that need to change.
Many thanks to Janet Midega in London.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
We've heard from Janet Midega on what challenges remain in boosting African nations' ability to fight drug-resistant bugs. Now, let's head to the ground. Specifically, in Malawi's remote rural Neno district, here access to healthcare is sparse, and just keeping non-communicable diseases like high blood pressure, diabetes, or hypertension under control is challenging. But that hasn't stopped organizations like Partners in Health Malawi from trying and implementing the first steps to help rural people. I'm now joined by Basimenye Nhlema, the Executive Director at Partners in Health Malawi, and DW correspondent George Mahango. Now, I'm going to start first with correspondent George Mahango, because he was the one who really brought us up to speed with the story of non-communicable diseases in Malawi. So, George, the first question I really want to ask is, like, as a reporter, how did you come across the story, and, you know, why is it particularly important in Malawi?
I traveled in different areas, one of which was Neno. Neno is close to Mozambique on the western side of Malawi, where we're taken to as a group of journalists. Mainly, it was to do with finding out as to how people live in terms of their health being, their educational being. But one of the fascinating things that I encountered was the fact that issues of health were indeed a challenge. And if it comes to issues of health, the most important thing that, you know, got me worried was the response of the authorities towards non-communicable diseases. Because we are talking about a district which is far away from the commercial capital of Blantyre, just like Zomba, where major referral hospitals are. And Neno has a few clinics, and it did not even have a health district hospital. So people were facing the pinch, traveling long distances to be assisted, be it maybe if they're suffering from diabetes, if they're suffering from hypertension, if they're suffering from maybe meningitis. They were traveling long distances. So this was a story that indeed, you know, brought the attention of journalists to say, why can't we do something to at least, you know, help, you know, sensitize the public, and then, you know, get to know as to how people are surviving in the course of maybe getting, you know, assistance so that they live longer.
Okay. Now I come to you, Basimenye. So why are these particular illnesses or diseases, why are they a particular problem in this area?
There are many factors, but the main being that these are places where people live under a lot of poverty, and some of them come as a result of being exposed to other conditions, and then they end up developing some of the non-communicable conditions that we end up seeing. So we see most of these from birth. Some of them are developed from the very young age. Others, as people are growing, so medium-aged people as well as the elderly.
Right. And I find this quite interesting, because is this something that is particularly noticeable in the rural areas? Or is this something that's also present in urban areas of Malawi, but it's just that it's not such an obvious problem because there's better healthcare treatment available?
It is noticeable in both rural as well as in urban areas, but as a country, because there's very little that has been done to shine a light on these conditions, we've got very little data that can give us the full scope of these conditions, as into what is the full burden of disease of these conditions. So there are some of the non-communicable conditions that do not have enough data to give us the full picture of what that burden of disease is. So in a way, yes, they are noticeable, observable. When you see people going to the facilities wanting to access services for these conditions, but then they are unable to access these services because those services are not readily available in primary healthcare facilities. They are not readily available in most secondary care facilities. At most, they'll find these services at tertiary healthcare level, which is very far. And by the time they are even getting to that point, it means the condition or the disease is at an advanced stage.
I see. Now, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go now to George, because I know George has also reported on this. He's even met some individuals who have actually suffered because of this lack of care that's at least available nearby. Is this also a case of people not actually being aware of how dangerous these non-communicable diseases are, and if they're not treated? Would you say that there is a general awareness among people?
Previously, there hasn't been that much awareness to inform people or to provide that civic education in rural areas as to how grave NCDs are in different communities. Because when I visited one of the areas in traditional Dambe in Neno district, I did meet with two patients that are receiving treatment, just like one Grace Lonzo in Tie Dambe, indicated that she's lived on insulin for about 24 years. And she is aged 75 years. So you can imagine, for 24 years, she's been receiving treatment. But before that, she was not even aware. Just like one John Welo in the same traditional authority, Dambe in Neno. He also said he developed stroke and then meningitis, leading him to be paralyzed. Something that maybe he was not even aware. Had it been that maybe some awareness messages were not being channeled, and had it not been that maybe services were brought closer to the people of Neno, which is a hard-to-reach area. So a number of testimonies there that civic education or awareness messages have not trickled down well before maybe 2012 or before 2007. But at least at the moment, there is that kind of sanity in them understanding as to what is NCDs and how they should prevent them and how they should, you know, eat balanced meal and what kind of food stuff they should not eat and how to eat those kind of food stuff. So some of them are aware now, but, you know, civic education has been a challenge over time.
So, Basiminya, I imagine you are also very aware of these challenges, but can you discuss a little bit more how your organization is also partnering with, you know, bigger governing bodies like the Malawian government to try and improve these situations?
Let me quickly chime in on what George just said. Many people live with undiagnosed NCDs because for them to know that they have a non-communicable condition, they need to have access to services that can screen and diagnose them and then put them into treatment and care programs. This is where the whole problem is, because the management programs for NCDs are not well developed in the country. And this cuts across all the levels of care, starting right at the primary facility level to the secondary care level. And even at tertiary, there are certain non-communicable conditions that we are not able to treat and take care of as a country, even at the tertiary level. So this is where now, as partners in health, we come in to accompany the Ministry of Health, both at subnational level as well as at national level, working collaboratively to put in place an effective system for managing different types of non-communicable conditions across the continuum of care. So we have worked with the Ministry of Health to establish the Malawi Non-Communicable Disease and Injury Poverty Commission. This was established in 2016 to help describe and evaluate the current NCD situation in Malawi and to look at what interventions or systems do we need to have available as a country to avert death and disability from non-communicable conditions. We have also supported government and continue to support with development of various national policy documents and guidelines, supporting with human capacity development through trainings and mentorship of service providers at all levels, development of the supply chain, national supply chain system, national monitoring and evaluation plan, as well as tools, but also working towards provision or establishment of space for service delivery, among other things.
George, the challenges that Basimenya has mentioned, they are obviously quite big. And just can you maybe talk us through like a situation where, for example, are there challenges beyond that?
In terms of finding good treatment, based on what I did gather on the ground, is that currently the situation is changing because there is this introduction of visits to quite a number of patients that are suffering from one of maybe the NCDs. They are being visited, provided with the much-needed medical care, so that at least, you know, those people that have been diagnosed do not miss the dosage. But the challenge has been that what if an organization like Partners in Health downs its tools to say our project has come to an end? That's where, you know, a number of these people are complaining about, because they cannot manage to be coughing money from their pockets, considering the fact of the poverty levels. We're talking about this being a remote district. We are talking about the shocks that the country has experienced, the Cyclone Freddy, the Cyclone Anna. So people have been left, you know, destitute. Some of them do not even have maybe houses. Some have lost their land. Some have lost their maize fields. So they don't have any money to support or to finance the medication aspect. So they depend on organizations like Partners in Health. But if Partners in Health leaves, then it means, you know, it will be tough for these people to, you know, live a good life. Suffice to say that the roads are also very bad. If it comes to rainy season, I don't think, and I can imagine if organizations like these will be able to reach out to each and every, you know, patient under their supervision, because roads are terribly bad.
Okay. Now, just before we end up, I want to go back to you, Basimenya, because we have talked about many of the challenges so far and many problems that are associated. But I have to say that what has been introduced is, of course, a definite start and is definitely a way to help people who probably 20 years ago would never have been able to be helped. So I feel that there is a certain level of hope to this. So perhaps could you talk a bit about, for you, what would be the ideal future for the program?
Yes, definitely. This innovation is a huge innovation, not just from the programmatic point of view, as we've highlighted, but also from the patient side, knowing that we've been able to address the question of accessibility, bringing these services closer to where the people are, so they don't have to travel these long distances as far as 15 kilometers, and also not having to travel to the clinic on separate days to access different services. So for us, this is a start, and our hope is to continue with strengthening the program here in NENO so that we work on the quality of the services that we are able to provide, but also address some of these challenges that we are talking about, for instance, the drug and supplies shortages in the facilities, but also to continue with national scale-up until all secondary and primary healthcare facilities in the country are well capacitated to provide quality NCD support that is relevant at their level. We also hope that there will be more partners coming on board to support with national NCD programming, as well as support the other NCD conditions that we've not started working on as a country. And lastly, we work with and through government so that these innovations, they are developed and strengthened using government structures. So we are not introducing any parallel structures. These NCD programs are being integrated in the MOH programs, MOH systems. That way, we are able to address the element of sustainability, because the country does not have resources to be running NCD standalone NCD programs. So we have to work within what is existing so that we are able to leverage the resources that we have and make the best out of them in order to improve patient care for non-communicable conditions.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. We greatly value your feedback because your participation makes this podcast what it is. So click follow so you can catch all the previous and future episodes. This one was co-produced by Crispin Mwakideo, and I'm Kai Nebe.
DW. Made for Minds.